Guys, it's episode 609 of All Time Top 10. ATTT is on the road this week. Back in February, me and the Hurley took a little trip to sunny Florida to hang out with one of my favorite people, my beloved aunt, Helene Eisen, who, like most good-hearted people, loves her some Diana Ross and also the Supremes. And we thought it would be a good time to bust out our gear and get a fantastic Diana Ross and the Supremes conversation on tape and listen to some timeless music. Part one of Top 10 Songs by Diana Ross and the Supremes with Aunt Helene, and a special assist from the Numbers Girl's best friend Shannon Hurley is coming up next. Thank you to all who have signed back on with Patreon to enjoy a monthly bonus episode featuring our patented Emergency Pod format. Emergency Pod number one with Joel Lavelle is out now, and you can get it by signing up at patreon.com/alltimetop10 and chipping in a measly $5 a month. Help out the pod and get some bonus entertainment in your ear holes. Thank you to our good friend Dustin Prince for signing back up. We do appreciate it. Join us, won't you? Also, come chat with us over at the brand new ATTT Facebook group. Bring up a topic, post a poll, and discuss all things music with pals over the pod and our favorite listeners. Speaking of Facebook, not to mention Instagram and Threads, our social media friends have been making things extra fun by participating in polls, voting for the bonus track of the week, and polls in service of the great rollout of songs featured in the big list, the 1,000 greatest songs we've ever heard, the ATTT 1000. It was Live Aid week this week, with the following three tracks unveiled. Number 640, Elton John and George Michael, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. I was asking you guys, what's your favorite song about the sun, with the sun in the title? Thank you everyone for your suggestions here. Lots of good stuff here. Who Loves the Sun by Velvet Underground, Always the Sun by the Stranglers, Matthew Sweet, The Wind and the Sun, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore by the Walker Brothers, Michael Franti and Spearhead, When the Sun Begins to Shine, Reach for the Sun by the Polyphonic Spree, Slow Dive, When the Sun Hits, Terry Jacks, Seasons in the Sun, They Might Be Giants, Why Does the Sun Shine, Waiting for the Sun, Set Controls for the Heart of the Sun, The Violent Femmes, Blister in the Sun, and like 200 more. Thank you, guys. But we love Elton John and George Michael. Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, our friend Dan says. Elton and Bernie by a mile. And it's also fun to hear that intro where Elton introduces George Michael. And a huge round of applause. And he goes, and Andrew Ridgely, too. Anyway, more stuff from Live Aid coming in at number 639. It's U2 with Bad. I was asking you guys, who is your favorite powerhouse vocalist? Good suggestions here, of course, Aretha Franklin, Roger Daltrey, Freddie Mercury, Amy Lee from Evanescence, Meatloaf, Glenn Hughes, Tom Jones, Robert Plant, Jimmy Somerville, Ian Gillan, Ronnie James Dio, Beth Hart, Sebastian Bach, Mike Patton, Gino Vannelli, Chris Cornell, Whitney Houston, Rob Halford, King Diamond, Bruce Dickinson, Pat Benatar, and again, like 100 more. But we love that performance of Bad from U2 from Live Aid. Just an unbelievable moment. Our friend JR on Threads says, quote, if I remember correctly, they fought when they got off the stage thinking they blew it. Oh, were they wrong? That's right. It's a great story. Everyone go read up on that moment from Live Aid. with U2 and Bad. At number 638, it's Queen, We Are the Champions, again, live at Live Aid. I was asking you guys, what's the best music biopic? I just want to point out that Bohemian Rhapsody is not my favorite, but I just wanted to put it out there in the poll so we can talk about it. Good suggestions here from you guys for biopics. The Runaways, The Doors, Rocket Man, Walk the Line, Coal Miner's Daughter, Meatloaf, To Hell and Back, Controlled, Buddy Holly Story, 24-Hour Party People, Ray, The Dirt, Love and Mercy, Backbeat, La Bamba, Selena, La Vie en Rose, I'm Not There, What's Love Got to Do with It, Respect, Amadeus, and many more, including some votes for This Is Spinal Tap, Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story, and The Ronalds, which are not technically on the list. But anyway, we love Queen, of course. We love We Are the Champions. We love their performance at Live Aid. And that's all we need to say about that. That's number 638. Those three songs are now added to the ATTT 1000 Spotify playlist. It's also a YouTube playlist, and you can find those at Spotify and YouTube. So look for that. Follow along. Get ready for three more songs coming this week. We're going to add some more to it. It's going to be fun. But for now, let's go to Florida. Let's talk to the great Helene Eisen and Shannon Hurley, and talk about Diana Ross and the Supremes. Part one coming up now. Roll the tape.
As a child, Diana Ross loved singing and dancing for family friends, but not for free. She was smart enough to pass the hat. And later in Detroit's Brewster Housing Projects, she met Mary Wilson and Florence Ballard. Their neighbor, Smokey Robinson, put them in front of Berry Gordy. And the rest was magic, music history. The Supremes earned a permanent place in the American soundtrack. Along with her honey voice, her soulful sensibility, Diana exuded glamour and grace and filled stages that helped to shape the sound of Motown. On top of becoming one of the most successful recording artists of all time, raised five kids, somehow found time to earn an Oscar nomination for acting. Today, from the hip-hop that samples her to the young singers who've been inspired by her, to the audiences that still cannot get enough of her, Diana Ross's influence is inescapable as ever.
Top 10 Songs by Diana Ross and the Supremes, Part 1.
Welcome to another magnificent episode of All Time Top 10. Woo!
Yes.
Everyone clap with holding microphones somehow.
One the sound hands. Of one hand clapping.
It's the sound of three hands slapping against three knees. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Ben Eisen, and with me here today in Delray Studios. I'm just going to make up that name for this studio. Does that sound good?
Sounds pretty glamorous.
Not bad.
In glamorous Delray Beach, Florida. What? We're on the road. We are joined in-house by our wonderful friend that I've known for about 48 and three quarters of a year. Almost 49 years I've known this person. And she is the most wonderful. The person that brought us when we were kids the Nintendo that we used and our color TV. And she furnished us with an Atari back in the day. The ever generous and too kind, the great Helene Eisen is here. Yeah!
I mean, yay. How cool is that? An Atari? You're the cool aunt.
Dude, we had a VCR. Like, we grew up dirt. I don't want to use the word dirt poor. I hate that phrase. But we were not well off at all. And we wouldn't have had all the cool stuff that all of our friends had if not for our good friend and wonderful auntie, Helene Eisen. Hey, Helene.
Yay!
And our lovely host, right? Here in Delray Beach.
Yes, we're at the Delray Beach Glamour Inn.
That's the name of this place. Okay. Wonderful. So good to have you. And joining us just for fun is the numbers girl herself. Actually, her best numbers girl's best friend, I should say. Our friend Shannon Hurley's here.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. Shannon's tagging along on our little journey here.
Just to add some color commentary for you guys.
Well, you're a fan of the artists that we're going to talk about, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what might those artists be? Who might they be? It's Diana Ross. And it's the Supremes.
Yay.
And why, pray tell, did I think this would be a great topic for us to talk with the anti with the great Aunt Helene Eisen? Why did I think that? And I think you know the answer. Why is that?
I have several answers.
Give us the main one, I think. The one that sparked the conversation, anyway. We were talking, and I found out that
in 1968, I saw the original Supremes at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. I was a student at Parsons College in Fairfield, Iowa, and the Supremes were playing in Iowa City, and we went up to see them.
That's so amazing. Just amazing. Like, you were in the room with not just Diana Ross, and like, you can still catch her in concert today. In fact, she's playing, what's that big festival that David Daskal told us about? What's it called?
Something Love. What was
Get on
it?
That mic, woman.
Foolish Love?
Fool in Love.
Fool in Festival. Love.
Lionel Richie, Diana Ross, all kinds. You got to see this lineup. It's insane.
Well, you're talking about Lionel Richie.
Yes.
He's from my hometown, Joliet, Illinois.
That's where I was born, too.
And his mother was a school principal in the same school district I taught.
No way.
Yes way.
Nice. All kinds of Motown connections.
Oh, yeah.
With the auntie. But you saw the Supremes live.
I did.
And you also saw Diana Ross live, am I right?
A number of times.
I mean, that's still, I would love to go to that thing.
I have a question for you. When you saw Diana Ross and the Supremes, did you know that Diana Ross is going to be a breakout star from that concert?
Oh, not at all in 1968. Not at all. She was with Cindy Birdsong and Mary Wilson.
Mary Wilson. Yeah, she really did break out, didn't she? And so for this episode, we have to try to encompass as much of it as we can by counting down our 10 favorite songs from The Supremes, when they were also known at one point as Diana Ross and The Supremes, and then as Diana Ross solo. So we're covering all of that, which is insane to think we can do that in 10 songs.
Good luck, you guys.
I have about 14 that I would love to play, but we each only get 5, unfortunately. But thanks so much to our listeners. I want to give a shout out to everyone. We'll do that if we play one of your songs that you suggested. But our friends on social media asked for 114 different songs.
Oh, Okay.
So we're going to give them 10.
You're going to be letting so many people down.
Well, we're still going to play some great music. Hello. We're going to try anyway. Before we jump in, I just did a little, I was looking at Motown.com. I was looking at a couple places, getting sort of like the background of how they started. So here's just what I wrote about that. I think I got this from Encyclopedia Britannica.com. I should have wrote down my source. I'm usually really good at that. Sorry, guys. But it says the Supremes formed in the Brewster Douglas Public Housing Project in Detroit in 1959 as the Primettes, conceived as a sister act to the Primes, the group that would later become the Temptations.
Nice.
Yeah. Paul Williams of the Temps is credited with the concept. The original members were Florence Ballard, Mary Wilson, and Diana Ross, and Betty McClown. Smokey Robinson got them an audition with Motown in 1960, but Berry Gordy made them wait until they finished high school, signing them in 1961 and changing their name to the Supremes. Barbara Martin, who had replaced Betty McClown, left the group in early 1962, and they became a trio. Their first number one was Where Did Our Love Go in 1964. In 1967, Berry Gordy changed their name to Diana Ross and the Supremes and named Diana Ross the lead singer. As the Supremes and Diana Ross and the Supremes, they released 29 studio albums and 66 singles. 12 of them went to number one.
Jeez.
Shannon Hurley.
I love that they had to wait to finish high school before they could go out.
Don't you love that?
It's a smart thing.
Yeah.
Yep. Just in case, you know, it didn't work out.
Yeah, it's pretty grounded.
Pretty grounded. So most of their number one hits were written by the songwriting team of Holland Dozier Holland, which we're definitely going to talk about. Diana Ross went solo in 1970, has released 26 studio albums, 105 singles, and an additional 6 number one hits. That's insane. So we could do this top 10 list, play all their number one hits, and still not be able to cover them all. There's 18 total between all of them. That's incredible. Anyway, let's do the list. Let's do number 10, top 10 Diana Ross and the Supremes songs. What? Who wants to go first there, Helene?
Well, sure.
You want to go first, number 10? All right, what do you have?
Touch Me in the Morning.
Romantic. This is Diana solo, right?
Yes.
Great. I am definitely going to have to list a bunch of names here, so bear with me. Thank you to Marcel, Terry, Nick, Dolores, Lisa, Kimberly, Lawrence, David, Michael, Andra, Donnie, and Drew. They all want to hear Touch Me in the Morning, and that'll be our number 10.
Number 10, Touch Me in the Morning.
Touch me in the morning, then just walk away. We don't have tomorrow, but we said that nothing good's gonna last forever.
That is such a fantastic song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Benjamin, you forgot to mention.
Uh-oh, I forgot to mention something.
Yeah.
What?
That Diana Ross had 16 greatest hits on the list of all time.
What list is that? 16. Who's making that? I'd put their
100 promise. Artists of all time. 16 greatest. Hot artists.
Oh,
of all
from Billboard. Yeah. I think they like rank artists as far as like sales and stuff. But
that band was cooking.
Right?
Such a great performance. And like Burt Bacharach style horns. Did you hear that in there? And
I was looking for two things. I wanted to know, you know, who the personnel was on that album. You saw me like digging through Wikipedia. Yeah.
Couldn't find it.
No, it doesn't say who the studio musicians were. But I also wanted to know who wrote it, and it's Ron Miller and Michael Masser.
I wonder, did you guys hear a hint of Just the Way You Are by Billy Joel in that song? I wonder if he had to pay songwriting credit, like
really?
Partial. Do you hear that? Like there's like a little, like there's like a little pre-chorus of Just the Way You Are that sounds a lot like the chorus in this song, or in the B section anyway.
I don't hear it, but
man.
I like that. I wasn't paying attention to that. I was paying attention to how much that song could have and probably was covered by Barbara Streisand. Was it or no?
Has to have been.
I think so.
I mean, that's like right up her alley too. Like that's where Diana and Barbara meet, right?
But emotive. It sounds almost like it could be a Broadway song.
Yep.
Like it sounds so anthemic.
Hurley.
Yes.
You had to bring up Broadway, of course. Anyway, thank you for that one, Helene. Let's go to number 9. And we're going to go to 1980. The song is called I'm Coming Out. Throughout her solo career, Diana worked with lots of amazing talent. Ashford and Simpson wrote and produced most of her solo stuff. As the 1980s came around, she wanted to get sort of a new sound. She turned to Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards of Chic to produce her album Diana from 1980. And here's a little bit from Wikipedia. They say, on an episode of TV One's Unsung, Nile Rodgers said that the majority of the songs were crafted after direct conversations with Ross. She had reportedly said to Rodgers and Bernard Edwards that she wanted to turn her career, quote, upside down and wanted to, quote, have fun again. As a result, Rodgers and Edwards wrote the songs Upside Down and Have Fun Again. and of course, this one. We talked about I'm Coming Out in 2022 when we did Top 10 LGBTQ Anthems. But the story about that is worth repeating. Now, Rodgers confirmed in a TikTok video that the song was originally intended for the LGBTQ community and was inspired after seeing drag queens dressed as Diana Ross at a New York club. Nile Rodgers said this, quote, so the way that the song I'm Coming Out came to be was when we went to work for Diana Ross, we wanted to write about things that were in her universe. So we went to her apartment and interviewed her for a couple of days. One particular night, I went to a club, the Gilded Grape, and I happened to notice that there were at least 6 or 7 Diana Ross impersonators.
Nice.
So I went outside to call Bernard and said, you know, Diana Ross is revered in the gay community. If we wrote a song called I'm Coming Out for Diana Ross, it would have the same power as James Brown's Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And the next day we met in the studio, and from there we built the song.
So smart.
Yeah, completely. This was a number five hit. Shout out to Tony Thompson, the drummer who takes over the first 30 seconds of this song. And like,
shout out to the trombone player that was kind of mad that they used the first take.
We're going to talk about that when we come back, because that's another story unto itself. But we got to hear I'm Coming Out. And so many of our friends wanted to hear it as well. Big shout out to Tim, John, Lisa, and Nick. They say, play I'm Coming Out. And that's what we're going to do here at number nine.
Number nine, I'm Coming Out.
Guys killing it on the trombone there.
On the trombone,
on the bone.
Yeah, what's the story?
All right, you want the story and you got it. Shout out to Miko Minardo, who some might know as Miko, the man behind the disco-fied versions of the Star Wars music. He plays the trombone solo on I'm Coming Out. He said this in an interview. Quote, Niall recorded all the tracks and vocals and called me in my horn section for a 3-hour date. We had a great time as the songs were fabulous, especially Upside Down and I'm Coming Out. We sounded great. Niall was pleased, and as I was packing up, he asked me to stay and play a jazz trombone solo on one of the tracks. I said, Niall, there are a lot of hit records with jazz saxophone solos, even some with jazz trumpet solos, but not one with a trombone. He said, that's exactly why I want you to do it. Apparently, Miko didn't care for the take that ended up on the album, although he did say, quote, "I'm extremely proud to say that my solo is the only jazz trombone solo of a top 10 pop hit in the last 50 years. But it wasn't my best. That, unfortunately, lies in the vaults at Motown."
Oh, okay. I want to hear the alternate takes.
Yeah.
I want to hear a remix of the song with that trombone solo.
I don't think you're
solo.
Ever going to hear that.
Oh, come on. Let's hear Miko's other takes.
You're
going
to have to
takes.
Wait for Berry Gordy to leave this this world.
Oh, geez.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he'd be interested in putting that up, but we'll see. Anyway, that's I'm Coming Out, number 9. What do you think of that one, Helene? What do you think? Use your, you have a microphone in your hand.
I do. It's a good song.
Yeah. It's 1980. So, anyway, what's number 8? What do we got?
Oh, did you know that Dinah Ross sang background for Marvin Gaye and Mary Wells?
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
And she toured with the Dick Clark's Caravan of Stars.
Nice.
Hmm.
I love Dick Clark.
Yeah.
The more I read about the history of that guy, the just...
Yeah.
You know, he was just a mensch in every way, you know?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. So what's number 8?
Oh, how's about The Happening?
The
oh,
Happening.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, this is a... this is happening.
The first time I heard this song was in 1995 for an advert on TV when I was in London. And it was a cover. And they were using... Yeah, they were using it in a UK ad.
Nice.
I was like, what is this song?
This song is wild. You know, it's funny. I'm reading a book now called The Downtown Underground. And it's all about New York and in the 60s and like 50s too, where they like Andy Warhol scene and all that. And that's where that term came from, was The Happening. They would have these events and call them happenings. Mm-hmm. And it came like from Beatniks and, you know, that whole cool daddy-o kind of thing. You know? But this song is really fun. You want to hear it?
Absolutely.
All right. Number 8 is The Happening. Thanks so much to Lucia, Melissa, Harry, Patricia, and Andra. They say play The Happening, and it's number 8. Number 8? Yeah, number 8.
Number 8, The Happening.
Hey, life, look at me. I can see the real time. Shook me.
It's definitely James Jamerson on the bass.
Yeah,
there.
That bass part was so playful. So great.
That is The Supremes, not just Diana Ross and the Supremes, but the Supremes from the early years. The Happening.
I really need to find that, that song is so that great. British advert. It's going to haunt me.
What's it for?
By the way,
here's a bit on Happenings from the Urban Dictionary. I just had to look this up. They say, Happening, an art event, often staged or pre-scripted, that requires active participation from an audience to come to full fruition. Used in a sentence, Flux's art involved the viewer, relying on the element of chance to shape the ultimate outcome of the piece. The use of chance was also employed by Dada, Marcel Duchamp, and other performance art of the time, such as Happenings.
The Happening Weetabix. And I don't know.
Was it Weetabix?
I don't know. I feel like it was some...
I think it's your microphone, by the way.
It was some snack or some cereal. I'm going to find it before the end of the episode.
Okay, please do. Thanks for that. That's The Happening, number 8. Let's go to number 7. And as been largely documented, 1968 was a time of great turbulence. It was only a matter of time before social issues infiltrated Motown's music. And 3 years before the smashing success of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, you have some social commentary in pop music from Diana Ross and the Supremes. This is Love Child, 1968. And in 1967, Diana Ross and the Supremes dropped Florence Ballard. They engaged new member Cindy Birdsong, which is the one you saw, and they added Ross's name to the billing. Following this string of changes, the Supremes had mixed success on the pop charts. Reflections peaked at number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100, and In and Out of Life peaked at In and Out of Love peaked at number 9. But the group's next two singles did not reach the top 20. So this prompted Motown label chief Berry Gordy to hold a special meeting in a room at the Pontchartrain Hotel in Detroit, which was attended by a team of writers and producers at the label, including R. Dean Taylor, Frank Wilson, Pam Sawyer, Deke Richards, and Henry Cosby. The group, calling themselves The Clan, set to work on a hit single for Diana Ross and the Supremes. Instead of composing another love-based song, the team decided to craft a tune about a woman who is asking her boyfriend not to pressure her into sleeping with him for fear they would conceive a love child. The woman portrayed on the record by Diana Ross is herself a love child, and besides not having a father at home, had to endure wearing rags to school growing up in a, quote, old, cold, rundown tenement slum. And so it's basically a true story, you know, of Diana's upbringing. She sings it in the lyrics. Started my life in an old, cold, rundown tenement slum. My father left. He never even married mom. I shared the guilt my mama knew. So afraid that others knew I had no name. This love we're contemplating isn't worth the pain of waiting. We'll only end up hating the child we may be creating.
Oh, God.
Love child never meant to be. Love child scorned by society.
I've got tears in my eyes even just hearing the lyrics.
I played this for Shannon as a refresher a few days, like a week ago, and she was bawling at the end of it.
Well, I was a love child, but I was conceived with love.
You got to talk that on
my mom and dad.
Oh, my goodness.
You know that.
I don't want to hear about that. Just kidding. So let's listen to Love Child. And believe it or not, it's not on the record. It's not Mary Wilson and Cindy Birdsong singing the backing vocals. It is Motown session singers, the Andantes. And it's Diana Ross and the Supremes, even though they aren't on the track, the Supremes. Huh. But it's Love Child anyway. And it's number 7. Watch out, Shannon Hurley's going to shed a tear or two.
I'm already crying. I'm pre-crying. Pre-crying.
I'll always love you. It's going to get her. Tim, Bill, Nick, Justin, Lisa, Lauren, Harry, Tony, Strauss, David, Michael, Bruce, Ed, Karsten, Michael, Andrew, Donnie, and Larry. Say Love Child. Number 7.
Number 7.
Love Child.
We'll be right back.
Oh. I just want to hear isolated bass versions of every one of these songs.
And there's so much going on in that song, too. The whole arrangement is so fantastic.
Like, it's wild, isn't it?
The guitar just chugging along at the same time the bass is doing that thing. And and the glockenspiel up top. And then
and the backing
vocals. The
Andantes,
vocals. Yeah. They're just doing their thing. Just, God, so inventive.
Yep. Do you want to have an idea of how good music was in 1968? So that song, Love Child, was the 11th and penultimate number one hit for Diana Ross and the Supremes. You only had one more together after that. So that hit number one after knocking off Hey Jude, which was number one for 9 weeks straight. Love Child was number one for 2 weeks before being dethroned by Marvin Gaye's I Heard It Through the Grapevine. Uh-huh. I mean, what do we have today? Despacito and Old Town Road and all this. It's not fair. Anyway, I'm jealous that I wasn't around during that time. You know? You have a microphone. Use it.
You should be.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, into that microphone, please tell us what number six is.
Number six. Mm-hmm. You Can't Hurry Love.
Oh, yes. This was a total steal.
I hate to say that my introduction to the song was Phil Collins.
That's okay.
And I love the Phil Collins song, his version. But seriously, I was like, this song is so great.
It is great.
And then I didn't even know that there was a Supremes version of this song.
Oh, yeah. See, I heard oldies radio a lot when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And back then, oldies was 50s and 60s. So I knew it was a cover. But like I said, I this was one of my picks, so I did some notes. And there, that Phil Collins thing, it's kind of interesting what he talks about when he talks about it. He said this to Mojo Magazine in 2009. He said he covered the track as a tribute to Motown.
Nice.
And he says this, quote, "Motown is where I lived musically when I was growing up. I was a regular at the Marquee Club at Wardour Street in the 60s. This is in London. I always went to see The Action and The Who, and they both did great Motown covers. The Motown tracks were always an inspiration. The opening chords and groove of Heatwave always sounded like the sun had come out to me. It was so uplifting and positive. Even the names, The Supremes, The Four Tops, The Marvelettes, The Miracles, sound like their glasses are half full. The musicians on all the Motown tracks, they didn't play like the other pop session guys, Benny Benjamin, James Jamerson. All of them were really jazz musicians, and every day they would go to work and know that they'd be playing on a huge hit record, and it would be classic material. It must have been wonderful.
Yeah, they really did have their formula down, you know, just the, you know, Dozier, Holland, Holland, Dozier, and Holland.
Holland, Dozier, Holland.
Or just, you know, the music factor. They're basically like the Brill Building. Yeah. Songwriters.
Eddie Holland, Lamont Dozier, and Brian.
Lamont Dozier, that's right.
And Brian Holland.
Lamont Dozier, he's the one that would come to Taxi, the songwriting meetup every year. And I remember he was there to.
He's friends with a lot of those Kibitz guys.
Yeah. I went to one of his songwriting workshops.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So they wrote. You Can't Hurry Love, among like hundreds of others. Do you want to hear it?
Of course, it's here someplace.
Okay, check it out, everybody. You Can't Hurry Love, number six.
Number six. You Can't Hurry Love.
Keeps me hanging on when I feel
So good. So good.
So uplifting.
Shout out to the Motown beat, by the way. It's unclear. There was like an argument about it on Reddit that I was looking at, but we think that that's the first song to have the Motown beat. I mean, it's been
used. In a town called Malice.
Right, town called Malice, Lust for Life, Are You Gonna Be My Girl, Last Night by the Strokes, Maneater.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here she comes. Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Yeah.
So that's the first song to ever use that, I think. We'll see.
Reddit will tell the tale. The
folks will tell us that we're wrong on the social medias. Anyway, that's number six, which means we're at the halfway point, which means we are at the end of part one. Say goodbye, everybody. We'll be back next week.
Ciao from Delray Beach, Florida.
And adios.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, everyone, check it out next week. We'll be back with the top half of our list. We have one more thing to do. We're going to play you guys the bonus track of the week for Top 10 Diana Ross and the Supremes songs, part one. Check it out. This is the song you guys requested over there on social media. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next week, peace out.
As chosen by our listeners on social media, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey everybody, it's time for the listener pick bonus track of the week selected by our friends on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. All right, thank you so much to the great Helene Eisen and the great Shannon Hurley for coming through for us on the Diana Ross and Supremes episode. Part one is in the books. Part two is coming up next week. Please be sure to tune in for that. So much more great music to get to. But we have time for one more song. It's the bonus track of the week. And these are the songs you guys were voting on over there on social media. We had Love Hangover. We had I Hear a Symphony. We had Upside Down. But the winner this week, it's an all-time classic from 1965. The Supremes doing Stop in the Name of Love. Of course, written by Eddie Holland, Lamont Dozier, and Brian Holland. Dozier said he got the idea after he got cheated on by his girlfriend. In the heat of the argument, he said, "Baby, please stop in the name of love before you break my heart." Yeah, ripped from real life events anyway. Yeah, Stop in the Name of Love, of course, number one hit. Just classic, all-time classic Motown sound, all that good stuff. We love it. And thank you so much to Elizabeth, Tim, Steve, Johnny, Strauss, Lawrence, Andra, Ed, Drew, and Larry. They say stop in the name of love. And that's what we're going to hear, the bonus track of the week for part one. Check us out next week, everybody, with part two. We'll be back in your ear holes then. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next time, peace out.
Listener pick.